For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Outgoing Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi has been meeting with the country's president, this after a heavy defeat in a constitutional referendum. Matteo Renzi said he would resign after the vote. President Mattarella must now either appoint a new prime minister or trigger elections in the country. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe says he'll visit Pearl Harbor this month to console the souls of the victims of Japan's attack there 75 years ago. Abe will be the first serving Japanese Prime Minister to visit the naval base in Hawaii. Earlier this year, Barack Obama became the first sitting U.S. president to visit the site of the U.S. Hiroshima bomb attack. Harry Horton reports from FSN Washington.
When Japanese forces attacked Pearl Harbor in December 1941, it ultimately led to the United States entering World War II and the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Earlier this year, President Obama visited Hiroshima to pay his respects to the victims of the U.S. attack. Now, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe says he'll console the souls of the victims of Japan's surprise Pearl Harbor assault. President Obama was born in Hawaii, and the visit to the island's naval base on December 26 and 27 will be his final meeting with his Japanese counterpart. Harry Horton, Air News, Washington.
The United Nations Security Council is voting for a 7-day ceasefire in the Syrian city of Aleppo to help evacuate civilians. It's the latest draft resolution to seek the Council's approval after other recent attempts have failed. Nick Harper reports from the United Nations in New York.
Three of the Council's members, Egypt, New Zealand and Spain, have put forward this resolution aimed at a temporary ceasefire in Aleppo. The UN wants to use the week-long pause in fighting to get the sick and injured out and much-needed aid in. In October, two competing resolutions on the same day failed to pass in the Security Council. The main sticking point was Russia refused to ground its warplanes to stop the bombardment of the city. The Syrian government is now continuing its advance into rebel-held parts of eastern Aleppo. The UN's humanitarian chief, Stephen O'Brien, has warned the city is becoming one giant graveyard. Nick Harper, New York.
US President-elect Donald Trump has taken to Twitter to criticize China over its monetary policy as well as military operations in the South China Sea. China's responded by saying that both sides should stick to basic principles of their relationship. Donald Trump had already risked a diplomatic rift with China by speaking directly to the president of Taiwan. There's lots more from us up at our Facebook page, facebook.com/featurestorynews, including an exclusive interview with Edward Snowden, produced by FSN Moscow. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to the People's Radio Show. I hope you're well. My name is Richie Allen. It's Monday, December 5th, 2016. The first show of a brand new week. We've got some terrific guests for you lined up for the next couple of hours. Don't go anywhere.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And I hope you had a good weekend wherever you were, whomever you were doing it with. Coming up this Monday, in the second hour, David Noakes is back on the programme. It's been a long time since he joined us. He's a pilot, former UKIP general election candidate, and a former employee of JP Morgan Chase. These days, David promotes the health benefits of GC Math, and he does that through immunocentre.eu. Tonight, though, he'll be telling us why the establishment in the United Kingdom are hell-bent on derailing Brexit. Don't miss David Noakes an hour, too. And Garrodo Colmon joins us this hour. I'm delighted he's back. He's a terrific journalist and geopolitical analyst. We'll be talking about the bombardment of Yemen by Saudi Arabia, the part played by the UK there, the inherent hypocrisy in the British government's condemnation of Syria and Russia and their conduct in Aleppo. And we'll also be asking, I'll be asking, Garrod, What will happen when, not if, because it looks like when now, Bashar al-Assad's army takes back the city of Aleppo? All of that coming up this hour. So it's a busy old programme. And as usual, you can contact me via Twitter at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Twitter, as I say over and over again, is much more instant. It's easier for me to see the tweets as they come in. Nice weekend. Nice old weekend it was. Quiet around Shea Allen, Casa Allen, he says rather misogynistically. It's as much the future Mrs. Allen's casa as it is mine. She's away on company business, back to France, in fact, for a couple of days. So things are nice and quiet around here. We did go to see the film Arrival over the weekend. We never see anything when it comes out. We normally wait a couple of weeks until all the furore has died down. And much as I've got a terrific memory, I think it's Amy Adams, the actress in Arrival. Very good. Very, very good actress. And I think Jeremy Renner might be in it as well. It's a really interesting sci-fi film about the arrival of an alien species on planet Earth. Not the normal fare, you know, death and destruction and all of that, but a more thought-provoking film about time. It's about time and the fact that time isn't linear, and it's very good. I recommend it. That's all I'm saying. I recommend it. Although I've been told many, many, many times that my recommendations, well, they're not worth the paper they're not word printed on. We thought the film was good. I recommend it anyhow. Before I go any further, I want to say hi to Fiona Pendlebury, who's in Wigan. Fiona is a friend of the show's and a supporter of ours. She's been with us since day one. Sent me an image today of the skies above Wigan, which I put out on our Facebook page. Funnily enough, the skies over South Manchester mirrored those over Wigan and elsewhere around the country. You can guess what's coming. Crisscross, tic-tac-toe patterns of, well, of chemtrails. Not contrails, chemtrails. And it got me thinking, some of our listeners will remember me from a few years ago. And when I was based in Spain, I did a series of daily photographs of the skies above San Pedro, which is near Marbella. And I posted those pictures on Facebook. They're probably still on my timeline. And, of course, for 6, 7, 8, 9 days in the summer, you had clear skies. Not so much as a contrail, even though the height of the summer, air traffic, very busy over that part of Spain. And then, of course, one day, you'd get up to take your dog to the beach and you had the tic-tac-toe crisscross patterns. Now, I've done it here as well in Manchester. I've done it. I've taken pictures. We're near the airport on many a day, clear as anything. And then one day, bang, these things appear all over the country. How can people with any modicum of intelligence say to you, oh, that's a load of nonsense, that? You know, you take regular photographs of clear skies and then one day, bang, blue skies, but bang, chemtrails. Or contrails that hang around forever and ever, which means they're not contrails anyway. Look, we've done a lot about it on the programme. Thanks, Fiona, for sending me that picture. And there were one or two tweets of other areas around the UK today which had similar patterns. This is sky covered in these things. We are broadcasting live on davidicke.com, alternatecurrentradio.com and Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. Check out davidicke.com/headlines. Now, following this programme, as it's Monday, Kim Hutchison will be here with a meditation, a healing meditation entitled Going to the Heart of the Cosmos to Heal Your Own Heart. That follows me at the end of the show. Big old weekend of news. Big old weekend of news. We did speak to Jim Greywolf Petruzzi, didn't we, on Thursday's programme about what's going on in North Dakota. It seems that there's been some good news there over the weekend. It looks like very good news. However, as my producer Claire Calvey said to me today, you'd have to treat any news with a degree of caution. Now, the news is that the US Army has said that it would not authorise the final section of the Dakota Access Pipeline to allow alternative routes to be considered. So they're not going to authorise the final section of the Dakota Access Pipeline, which would have went under the Missouri River. Obviously, big possibility for leaks into the river and serious contamination and serious problems. And of course, it also was due to go through sacred burial grounds from the North Dakota Sioux. Huge problem, the Standing Rock Sioux, huge problems. Massive protests going on there for months and months and months. The Army has said it won't authorise the final section. We're going to have a look at alternative routes. So congratulations to everybody there. We'll watch it closely. However, US President-to-be Donald Trump says he supports the project. And my friend Patricia Braunschweiler has been tweeting and posting on Facebook madly, saying that, well, he would do because he's got a vested interest in it. He's got money in that pipeline, the Donald. So he said he supports it. We're going to watch this closely, but I'm glad that they've had some good news there. Alrighty. Now, the UK government doesn't believe that Saudi Arabia's bombing campaign in Yemen violates international law. Right? Who said that? Well, Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson. He said this to Andrew Marr yesterday on the Andrew Marr programme. He defended the UK's arms sales to Riyadh and he expressed support for the Arab Kingdom. He said, so far we do not believe that there has been a clear risk of a breach of the international humanitarian law. Yeah, well, that's what he's supposed to have said anyway. He said this on the BBC Sunday morning programme, Andrew Marr. Johnson was referring to the Saudi actions in Yemen. He said, we don't believe there's been a clear risk of a breach of the international humanitarian law. Do you want to hear some of the exchange between Johnson and Marr? I've downloaded some of it just for you. This is about 2.5 minutes long, so pay attention, but it's worth listening to.
What the war has been caused by the illegal takeover by the Houthi militias of the government in Yemen. That's what happened. And there's a campaign that is supported.
Civil war.
There is a campaign that
sides.
Is supported by the Arab League, by a vast coalition of and supported by the UN to move the Houthis out of Sana'a and to restore the legitimate government. Now, where you are right is that there are certainly very difficult questions that we have to address about the use of UK munitions and UK technology in that area. So far, I've got to be very clear about this because everybody's heard this a lot of times, but it is very important. So far, we do not believe that there has been a clear risk of breach of international humanitarian law in respect to
the UN panel
of the use of those weapons.
I'm sorry, but the UN panel has said there's been 191 violations of human rights in those attacks, and we're talking about British Brimstone missiles, Typhoon jets, and British help in targeting. And some of that targeting has gone horribly wrong.
Yes, I must correct you about the British help in targeting. The UK is supportive of Saudi Arabia, and we have a long-standing partnership and alliance with Saudi Arabia. But please be in no doubt. We are not engaged in the command and control systems of the operation, and we are. You know, you're asking a very important question because we are very concerned about what is happening, and we have raised our concerns repeatedly with the Saudis. But
we've raised our concerns repeatedly with the Saudis. What does that mean? What does that mean? The United Nations have said over 100 violations of international law. You utterly mad arch-criminal Boris Johnson. And British officers have been in Saudi control rooms since day one, specifically helping with the targeting. And Andrew Marr is the weakest, most feckless, most ineffective presenter there's ever been. Hammer him, man. He's lying through his teeth. We have a British government telling you on the one hand, Bashar al-Assad is targeting civilians. They don't prove it, mind. No proof, mind. They say he's being helped by Russia. Again, no proof, mind. Doctors Without Borders say that it's the Russians attacking the civilians. Really? Really? Assad isn't attacking his own civilians, neither are the Russians. What they're doing is driving out the Western-backed jihadists, ironically trained in Saudi Arabia for the most part, and following the Wahhabi form of lunatic jihadist ideology of Islam. Lunatics! And while all this is going on, this country, the UK, is party to heinous war crimes in Yemen. The answers given by Johnson, his mumbling, stuttering, embarrassing delivery, attempting to justify the government to Andrew Marr, is sickening. And Marr's ineffectiveness and his inability and unwillingness to nail Johnson to the wall as any part-time, piss-poor, semi-trained presenter would do. No, stop lying. Stop lying. We are targeting the Yemenis through the control rooms in Saudi Arabia. This has been admitted by your predecessor, you goon, you ridiculous-haired muppet. Stop lying. Stop killing people. And telling lies about other countries. Ah, so they got into Brexit then, didn't they? They got into Brexit. Marr got into Brexit with Johnson. Would the United Kingdom consider paying the European Union any sum of money to stay in the single market?
But if very large sums of money are now also going into the EU in order to buy ourselves access
to the single market. That is a speculation.
It's a speculation made by the minister in charge of Brexit public to the CBI. You know, it's not exactly an obscure leak. It's quite a big thing. And that a lot of people will be watching and think, hold on a second, after Brexit, are we going to be paying large amounts of money to the EU in return for access to markets?
No, I've given you an indication of the kind of payments that I think might be sensible.
So small, not large.
I see no, my own views, I see no reason why those payments should be large. And as I say, I do see a big opportunity for us to take the money that we're getting back and spend it on other priorities.
What happened to we don't need to be a member of the single market? Now it seems we might be prepared even to pay something to stay in the single market. Now, I'm not going to waste my breath telling you what I've told you time and time again on this programme, and what you knew anyway. It's more advantageous to be outside that single market lunacy, doing deals on your own terms, than it is to be in it. Now, the new UKIP leader, Paul Nuttall, was on the same programme yesterday with Andrew Marr. Now, Marr played him a video from hustings in 2011. The video appeared to show Nuttall endorsing the privatisation of the NHS. Marr then challenged Nuttall on that very thing.
Some people might believe that the NHS is a monolithic hangover from days gone by, and unfortunately, we're becoming an older population, and quite frankly, I would like to see more free markets introduced into the health service, because this is the way that we have to go. Let's face reality here. This is where it has to go. We're an aging population.
That's the reality. I'm sorry about the camera work. It wasn't a BBC crew, as you could tell. Nevertheless, it's quite clear you want to privatise the NHS.
Look.
Or you did.
Hang on. You know, I made it clear we are an ageing population. We're a growing population as well. At some point in this century, years on, we may well have to have a debate how we fund the NHS in this country. But I want to make it clear. Under my leadership, UKIP will be committed to putting more money into the NHS, but onto the front line, into nurses, into doctors, into midwives, because it cannot be right, let me finish, it cannot be right that in England today, 51% of people who work for the NHS are not clinically qualified.
You are sounding like you are now massaging the sacred cow. Have you changed your views?
No, I think that everything in politics should be up for debate. Nothing should be parked, because if you don't debate things, things never improve.
And one day it might go private.
Well, maybe at some point in years to come, within this century, we'll have to have this debate, but it won't be under my leadership in UKIP.
Don't believe any of him, especially Nuttall. Maybe in the future, he said, not in my lifetime. He's a free market capitalist, just like Nigel Farage, his predecessor. He believes in private interests, controlling everything. I know, I've interviewed these people, including Farage, several times. free market capitalists. They want every square inch of the planet to be privatized and under private control, under corporate control. Okay? You know, you might agree with them and you might understand the value of using them when you're discussing the European Union and the European Union referendum. But as we pointed out last year, when we spoke to people like Roger Helmer and others who've been back on this programme, a lot of these guys believe in TTIP. A lot of them. They'll tell you the party line, the UKIP party line, is to be against TTIP. But a lot of them believe in it. Oh yeah, they do, yeah. And that's where this NHS stuff is coming from as well. Now, you'll probably be aware, if you're in the UK today, I'm sure you will be, that the UK's biggest constitutional case in decades began today to decide how the government can begin the process of the UK leaving the European Union. This is going on at the Supreme Court. They are determining, or the Supreme Court is determining, how the government can trigger Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty. That sets out the constitutional basis of the European Union. And they have to trigger Article 50 to leave. The government says it can do so without an act of Parliament, using executive powers. Its opponents in court say it cannot. That's a case began today. It's going to run for a few days and we'll get the result early next year. The government loses. If it does lose, it has to introduce a bill in Parliament. That means the timetable for Brexit and the government's desire to keep its plans under wraps could be blown off course. Why is it happening? Well, we've discussed this at great length. On November 3rd, three senior High Court judges, including the Lord Chief Justice Lord Thomas, who's the head of the judiciary, ruled that the government did not have the power to trigger Article 50 using what is known as prerogative powers. The case was brought and won in the High Court by two claimants, the investment manager Gina Miller and the hairdresser Dear Dos Santos. People are not happy. Pro-Brexit protesters were making their feelings known outside Westminster today.
They are trying to overthrow a democratic decision. They had their say when they passed the bill. They approved the fact that we would have the referendum. And ever since that they got the result that they didn't want, they have done everything that they can to overthrow that decision.
We believe that democracy is very important. The MPs over there, some of them, Nick Clegg, Owen Smith and David Lammy, as well as Anna Soubry, have implied that they're going to ignore the voice of the people and they're going to vote against Article 50. We think this is wrong. Just there you have the statue of Cromwell, and on the signs here you can see the mention of the People's Charter. These were significant steps towards making sure that the common people had the vote. And we find it quite patronised that people in very liberal London-centric areas, such as establishment areas such as Richmond, are saying that the people's voice doesn't matter and that they're going to stop Brexit going through.
Now, Nick Clegg got a mention there. He's been one of the loudest voices for a second referendum. Do you remember him? Former Deputy Prime Minister betrayed the students of the UK by reneging on tuition fees promises. He's a liar, in other words. He reneged on those promises in order to form a coalition government with the Conservatives back in 2010. Proper liar. Proper liar. Well, he was on Sky's own Sunday morning political debate show yesterday, presented by Dermot Murnaghan. And of course, Brexit came up and Clegg took the opportunity to reinforce the possibility of a second referendum in maybe a year, maybe, said Clegg.
What happened on the 23rd of June is clearly the mandate which this government needs to follow. But what if people change their mind in the years ahead? What if they decide over time that this isn't such a good idea and that after all, now that when they see what Brexit means in practice, it doesn't look as attractive as it sounded in theory? I think he's quite right to say that, of course, as a country, we should keep an open mind because that's what we owe to our children and our grandchildren. So on that issue, at least, I actually agree entirely with what he's been saying.
Who's to say we won't change our mind in a year, said Nick Clegg. I'll tell you what, Nick, I'll see that and I'll raise it. Let's have a referendum in 12 months, Nick. And if the people say we want to stay in the European Union, let's have another referendum 12 months after that. Let's just keep going on and on and on and on and on and on. You lost, mate. 52% to 48. 52% of the public, of the population, of the voting age population of the UK said they don't want to be a part of the tyrannical European Union anymore. Get over it. You're with the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. The time, he says, looking at the clock, is exactly 25 minutes past the hour. Going to get my first guest lined up now. He is Garrodo Colmán, terrific journalist. We're going to talk about Yemen. You heard Boris Johnson there in the roundup there a second ago. We'll talk about Yemen and whether or not Bashar al-Assad's army, the Syrian government forces, are about to secure Aleppo. Back with more in a minute.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And you're very welcome back to the show. It's 27 minutes past the hour. We are broadcasting live on alternatecurrentradio.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, DavidIke.com. Check out DavidIke.com/headlines and the TuneIn app as well. That's TuneInRadio.com. I hope that's right. I really do. TuneInRadio.com, I think, is that website. Yeah. You can get the app for your phone anyway or your tablet. Coming right back in about 90 seconds with Garrodo Colmán after this. Keep those tweets coming in at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Here's the Spin Doctors.
Yeah.
Right, two princes from Spin Doctors on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Thanks for the tweets. Lots and lots of tweets on pretty much everything that I covered in the news roundup there. Didn't get into Matteo Renzi in the news roundup. You know that his defeat in the referendum over the weekend, it's been getting obviously massive coverage on mainstream media today. They're saying that it's the fall of the third domino, Brexit, Trump, and now Italy. He wanted to, I suppose, localise or concentrate more and more power into the hands of central government and the Prime Minister and take away power from the Senate. That didn't work out for him. He's resigned. As you know, he won't be gone yet. I've been asked for an opinion on this on social media. You just have to watch this very closely. That's all you can do, really. All sorts of predictions were made yesterday about market falls today that didn't materialise as well. You have to watch it closely. Look, let's go back to what we talked about at the beginning of the programme and comments made by the Foreign Secretary of the UK, that is Boris Johnson, on the Andrew Marr show yesterday. Marr brought up the Saudi bombardment of Yemen and said that Saudi Arabia was in violation of international law. Johnson defended it, defended the UK's arms sales to Riyadh. He expressed support for the Arab Kingdom, and tellingly he said, "We do not believe there has been a clear risk of a breach of the international humanitarian law." Incredible stuff, really. Incredible, in light of the United Nations itself saying that the Saudis have been in breach of over 100 laws. They've broken over 100 laws. There's definitely been humanitarian laws broken. And who better to talk about that than our first guest who's been on the programme before? He's a journalist and political analyst. His work focuses on globalisation, geopolitics and class struggle. You can see him regularly on Sputnik Radio, Sputnik English Press TV, RT, and many more. Check out his website, GarodoColmon.org, and Claire's going to tweet that out there so you can get on there and you can read him daily. Thanks to him for taking a call at short notice. He's in Paris. Garode, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hi, Richie. Great to be back again.
It's always good to have you on, mate. I really mean that. Thanks for doing it. As I said, short notice. Garode, how can the Foreign Secretary of the United Kingdom get away with going on national television and say that Saudi Arabia is not only not in breach of humanitarian law and international law, but the UK's role in that is all above board and it's all in order? What do you make of it?
I believe their attitude is that they can say whatever they want and that the public is generally indifferent to what they do, because the public is dumbed down by the press, is dumbed down by the entertainment industry, and has a very superficial understanding of what is happening in the world, and is sort of used to being lied to. I think they've kind of, you know, now they're sort of normalizing lies. Yes, we lie, you know, sometimes we lie, it's sort of, who cares, you know. They know that ultimately it's a sort of, they have a sense of being able to act with impunity and that people can't really do anything about it. So their attitude is, let's just be bold and defend Saudi Arabia. And, you know, I mean, the French gave, when the French decided to give the Légion d'honneur, the highest order of the state, to a Saudi prince recently, you know, there was a leak, you know, from the French embassy in Riyadh, and you know, they were kind of saying, look, you know, this will pass over in the media, just talk about human, make some comments about human rights, and you know, the public, it'll just bluff, and basically people will accept that this is just geopolitics and diplomacy and so on, and just makes, you know, just mention the fact that we've got some important contracts and that's important for our economy or something like that. So they don't care. That's the short answer, really, I think. They just don't care what people think. They're banking on people not thinking. They, you know, they deploy enormous resources to destroy thought, to destroy independent thought, the public's ability to critically analyze information. And we're deep in information war now, of course, because of the fake news phenomenon, the war on fake news, you know, because of the Trump victory. The Trump victory has really sort of, completely discredited the corporate media. And so now you're in kind of deep cognitive dissonance, really. You know, you're going to have, I think, a major sort of infiltration of alternative media, fake alternative media coming up. You're going to have a lot of chaos, I think, in the media sphere from now on, because they're going to have to do something fast to regain credibility. So the corporate press model, I think, is in deep crisis. But it doesn't surprise me at all what Boris Johnson says. Saudi Arabia is an important partner of the Western military alliance. They've used Saudi Arabia to commit genocide against the Syrian people. They used it to commit genocide against Libya. Saudi Arabia is a provider of proxy forces for terrorism. You know, it's basically its job is to, it enables the Western military alliance to outsource terrorism. And of course, there is always plausible deniability when you do that, so that they can always come out and say, yes, we know that the Saudis are backing terrorism. Trump has said that. Trump has said publicly, you know, everybody knows the Saudis are backing terrorism. This is the guy who's going to be the president of the United States. And he's already said that a major partner of the United States is behind the Islamic State. You know, will policy change towards Saudi Arabia under Trump?
Unlikely.
It's an interesting question, you know. So, like, it's openly admitted, but it seems that, you know, the military-industrial complex is so complex in terms of contracts. And, you know, if you look at the wars that the Saudis are engaged in Yemen and Syria, these are just geopolitically extremely complex wars. They're world wars, really, and they're not even separate wars. They're part of the same war. They're just two different fronts. You have all kinds of interests. I mean, Saudi Arabia basically is, according to many accounts, running out of oil. There have been some major oil discoveries in Yemen, in the Shabwa Basin in particular, that could be absolutely massive. So that's one factor. Another one is geopolitical. In other words, the Saudis fear that if and when the United States and Israel go to war against Iran, the Iranians will cut off the Hormuz Straits, which are in the Persian Gulf, and that would prevent Saudi access to the sea. And so they would have to go through Yemen. So they need to get Yemen under their control. And then you've got the other side, which is the Bab al-Mandab Strait, and that connects the Indian Ocean to the Mediterranean via the Red Sea, and that's very important as well. So you've got the Persian Gulf problem for Saudi Arabia. If the Iranians close the Straits of Hormuz, that's a huge problem for Saudi Arabia. And the other one is the Bab al-Mandab Straits. They want to get control of that as well. The United States and Israel want to control the Red Sea. The Chinese are already in the Horn of Africa. I mean, they now have their first foreign military base in Djibouti. And so, you know, when you actually start analyzing this, nothing makes sense anymore, because the Chinese are giving military advice to the Syrian government. They're getting more involved in Syria. They have to, because there are Uyghur terrorists in Syria, from the eastern province of Xinjiang in China. They're training in Syria, and this is causing a problem with China. It's causing a huge diplomatic spate with Turkey, because the Turks are backing these Uyghur terrorists. At the same time, the Chinese are officially supporting the Saudi government, because the Chinese interpretation of international law is that Hadi was the official president, if you like, internationally recognized. And because he was ousted, the Chinese don't want to rock the boat with Saudi Arabia. The Chinese have also sold arms to the Saudis, and they're also working with the Saudis in Djibouti. So everything is mixed up. Nothing really makes sense, you know. Everything is sort of about chaos management now. I should just say as well, you know, just to add to the absurdity in terms of human rights and, you know, kind of the humanitarian side of things. In 2011, you had essentially a color revolution in Yemen, and that revolution was part of U.S. policy. It took them years to kind of bring this about, but it was part of the Arab Spring, the series of geopolitical destabilizations of North Africa, and it was probably less covered in the West. I think people were more focused on Tunisia and Egypt, but. It was, I think, it was more covered in Iran because, of course, it was right next to them. And the Houthis, who are nominally Zaidi, which is a kind of a linked to Shiism. I'm not an expert on the specificities of the different currents of Islam, but let's just say it's considered to be Shia, but that's disputable. Nevertheless, the Houthi rebels were part of the uprising, but the U.S. Aim was to get rid of Saleh, President Ali Abdullah Saleh. He had cooperated with the West for a long time, but not completely. He was not a complete puppet. In 2008, he accused the Mossad of creating an al-Qaeda cell in the country. And, you know, he was aware that the U.S. And Israel were involved in destabilization. The country had been bombed continually by drones by the United States. So here you have Israel and the United States creating al-Qaeda and then bombing them. And so Saleh was aware of that. He'd also supported Saddam Hussein in 2003. So he was not, you know, a puppet, but he was somebody who kind of, like a lot of the other Arab leaders, had kind of gone along with the United States, but not completely. In any case, the United States created a color revolution. There was a popular element to it. There was real problems. Obviously, like all the color revolutions, are based on real problems which are exploited by the United States. Anyway, they got rid of Saleh, and one of the main heroes of that color revolution was a woman called Tawakkal Carmen, and she was a so-called human rights activist. She was described as the mother of the revolution. And she was a member of a political party, or was linked, at the very least, to a political party called ISLA, which was founded by a close friend of Osama bin Laden. ISLA is essentially al-Qaeda. It's the Muslim Brotherhood. It's a political wing of al-Qaeda. And she got the Nobel Peace Prize. She won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2011. A member of al-Qaeda. So that's amazing, the kind of theatre of the absurd we find ourselves in.
You know, in the middle of all of this then, and you know from, you know, speaking to me before, and you're clever, so you do your homework on any interviewer before you come on, you know that I think that the plans are dastardly. And it is an absolute mad myth, and it's hard to understand and hard to explain and confusing for people. It certainly is for me. But I think what's the driving force behind it, I think, is something dastardly, so evil that most people can't or don't want to entertain it. But I'm not going to go down that road. What I want to go down is, so here in the middle of all this, we believe, and again, this is not being reported in mainstream media. It's only coming to light because of independent journalists like yourself, honest and talented men and women who get a set of facts, look at them, put them out there, analyse them. It looks like the Syrian army is going to take Aleppo. What's that going to do, Garaud? What's that going to do to the NATO countries' plans for Syria? I mean, you and I have spoken in the past about them maybe dividing the country into two. Is that going to accelerate that awful reality that they'll try and put the country right down, split it down the middle, Assad on and the Syrian government and the army on one side, and the so-called moderate rebels, complete nonsense, of course, on the other side. What's going to happen if he takes Aleppo?
I think that I see the conflict with Russia. Obviously, again, just to put people in the picture, you know, the war on Syria and the war in Yemen is essentially not about Syria and it's not about Yemen. These are just these are part of a global geopolitical conflict between the emerging empires, the emerging powers of Russia and China, and the old Western imperial alliance, the transatlantic alliance, so the Atlantic powers, the United States, Britain, France, and Israel is kind of right at the middle of that, right at the top of it, if you like. And ultimately, the aim of the war in Syria is to create the kind of the conditions in which Israel can continue its colonization of Palestine, but in the long term, expand into neighboring territories.
Yeah.
In its long term, constantly expanding ambition to become the regional hegemon and a world power. You know, Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel must become a world power. Israel wants to become the world power. It wants to become, it's a tiny country, but so was Britain. And Britain ruled the world, and Israel wants to rule the world as well. So, so that's part of the background as to why this is happening. In terms of the big powers, they're the ones doing the fighting for the moment. I think rather than, you know, it's very hard to see a direct confrontational war. I don't see that. I find that very hard to see that happening now between Trump and Putin, you know, because the Russians have kind of done so much public, they've done so much lobbying, if you like, for Trump, that it would be, I think, very difficult for America to sort of turn around and stab them in the back. I think there's a kind of an expectation that there's going to be a detente between Russia and the United States for the moment. So I see that the war will instead probably spread into other theaters. So the fire will spread in different directions. And one of the dangers is Iran, because, again, you know, there's the Trump regime really is just a change of strategy. Nobody's really sure of what exactly that strategy is, but you know they're quite bellicose when it comes to Iran, so they may kind of calm things down a little bit with Russia. If Russia does, I mean, Russia is winning the war in Syria. Syria now is even exporting massively, 300% increase in exports to Russia of fruit and vegetables from Syria. So even the economy is completely
heavily dependent now on Russia. Yeah. Yeah.
And so Russia is gaining, like, so you may have a situation where the United States will disengage slightly and sort of say to Russia, okay, you've won this round. And then, you know, you could have then an escalation of neocon activity against Iran, and that they may then, you know, move the war again into Iran. Covert operations, I mean, people forget that there is an ongoing terrorist war against Iran. It has calmed down in recent years, but yeah. You know, there are different hotspots in Iran. There's Baluchistan, which is down in the south. There's the Baluchistan independence movement that's funded by the United States from Afghanistan. You have other terrorist groups in Iran who are supported by the West as well. So you could have that. You could have color revolutionary activity. That was they tried that in 2009. I find that hard to see that now, because Trump. It's the color revolutionary strategy is kind of based on American soft power. So Obama was good for that because it was all about marketing. America's young and cool and different. He himself was actually a color revolution himself. I mean, the embodiment of it, different color president and so on. So that was something that you could use as soft power. Trump would be much more difficult to use for a color revolution, because it's sort of like, I don't know, how could you, you know, I just couldn't see that.
You've got me thinking, Garrod. You've got me thinking. Amazingly enough, I think you're bang on the money. No, I don't mean amazing that you're bang on the money. You're often bang on the money. But you've got me. No, you are. You've got me thinking here. What did Trump say regularly during the campaign while he was saying more moderate things and more reasonable things about Russia, which we were all delighted about? At the same time, he constantly referred to the Iranian deal as a disaster. and that he would tear it up, didn't he? And if you juxtapose that with his allegiance with Benjamin Netanyahu, and that's not just, you know, two wealthy businessmen who happen to get on. Apparently, these guys really get on. That's where the next big problem could be. Then, I think you're on the money there.
Kushner is. His son-in-law Kushner, I mean, he's actually financed a lot of the settlements in Israel.
Yeah.
So it was well known. I mean, I said in my article on Trump where I was kind of saying, better Trump than Clinton.
Yeah.
But like, kind of, without having any expectations of, the fact that maybe they talk with Russia would be at least create the possibility of some kind of progress on Syria. It was kind of like Clinton, I guess, in a way, I was kind of thinking in the end, I was kind of wondering if the election was not a kind of a replay of the Obama election, in the sense that almost if you look back at the Obama election in 2008, like everybody had to, in the end, almost everybody had to vote for Obama because you couldn't vote for McCain. It was like kind of Obama or death itself. And so it was like, McCain was just such a pathetic character. Everybody said, "Well, at least Obama's new, and that'll be interesting. At least there's that element of unpredictability." And of course, you know, Obama said some things as well about calming things down, with Iran.
He certainly did. Iran,
Cuba, and so on. So I think, in a way, that this was a reverse Obama. I think that in many respects, the U.S. election. And the slogans should be used in reverse, because I think that the Obama election was not about hope and change. It was about, in many respects, in terms of soft power, making America great again. Because what makes America great, or what, in other words, what makes people think America is great, is the notion that it's a dynamic, young, cosmopolitan, forward-looking country. And that was Obama. So Obama was making America great again. In other words, making people believe in the American dream. Trump is America completely in despair from the failure of Obama and looking for hope and change. Trump is hope and change. Trump is kind of like, I'm going to be realist. Forget all this stuff. You know, we're going to get hard and we're going to say all these nasty things. And so it's kind of people... This is kind of, I'm going to, and he's talking about concrete things like immigration and so on, reindustrialization. And he's even still, tweeting this stuff. Because Trump is not what made America great in terms of the perception of America, which is what constituted America's power. What constituted America's power was the idea, after 1945, after they kind of conquered Western Europe, that they were kind of the empire of the hour. They were the new thing, this was Hollywood and, popular culture and so on. That's not Trump, because Trump is a return to sort of archaic America. So you can't sell that in Europe. Trump is universally unpopular among, in Europe and around the world. This is a different strategy. It's a different marketing strategy. But I think one of the things you have to bear in mind, one of the dangers with the, if you can call Trump the far right, whatever that means, let's say the nationalist right, Trump, Marine Le Pen, and other leaders, is that they have policies which are, if they were implemented, would certainly slow down like globalization. Because what the elites want is a complete destitution of nations and peoples and identities, so that everybody just becomes a kind of a cog in the machine, and you have kind of infinite possibilities for divide and conquer. So if you get back to kind of national parliaments, it is a move back, to use a phrase from Lenin, it's a move back, one step backwards to take two step forwards, in a sense that you're kind of you're slowing down globalization, the process of globalization. It does mean then that American workers will have jobs, and of course that benefits an already multiracial state. So the black community in the United States would benefit enormously those policies because they would no longer be in competition with Mexican workers, and they would, you know, they would have a possibility to get out of jail and get back into the workforce, because immigration has essentially, since 1965 in the United States, has destroyed the black proletariat. They basically lost everything through immigration, which is why a lot of the, you know, the black leaders voted for Trump. It was because of these issues. If they implemented those issues, then you could see something kind of interesting happening. But one of the real dangers with these movements, these nationalist right movements, is that instead of identifying the real driving force of globalization, which is Zionism, they focus on Islam. And you see this in Trump, you know, it's
yeah,
like...
This comes out of identity politics, doesn't it? Gilad Atman.
Why not say, you know, like deny all people from the Middle East coming into the United States? That would be Israelis as well.
Yeah, including the Israelis. Yeah, yeah.
you might then see, you know, your reduction in terrorism, you know. But, you know, it has to be, it's all about Muslims. And this is the, you hear this from Marine Le Pen as well, you know. You hear this.
And Geert Wilders and all the rest of them, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and Wilders is Jewish. I mean, he's Israeli, basically. So you have, you know, you have that's one of the dangers I see with these movements, you know, that they're not identifying the problem, and by saying Islam is the problem, what you're doing is you're actually playing into the game of the clash of civilizations, and you're getting Christian civilization.
That's right. This is brilliant stuff, Garrod.
Islamic civilization.
Yeah, and this is we had Gilad Atman on the program a couple of weeks back. It was the first time he'd been on in a long time, and he really had a bee in his bonnet about identity politics and what it leads to, which you've just described there brilliantly. It's exactly right, and people don't get it. And we had a raft of emails today. Oh, it's great, Matty O'Renzi. It's great. You know, and I delicately, because you don't want to be telling people what's right and what's wrong, because it's all a game of opinions, ultimately. But I say to people, look at, you know, who's supporting these guys and why. And you'll find they just don't get the bigger picture.
No, they don't. I mean, you'll hear on, you know, Fox News, and you hear all these things, you know, about, as we come up to Christmas, people are going to be talking about,
so predictable, isn't it?
about secularism, and should we be having Christmas creches and things in the like nativity scenes and things like that, because that would be offensive to Muslims. And it's all based on ignorance, because, you know, Muslims recognize Christmas, they recognize Christianity, they you know, enlightened, educated Muslims are very fond of Christianity and very respectful toward it. I mean, that, you know, when I was in Iran and I toured Iran, they always ask you if you're a Christian, and the correct answer is yes. they recognize it and they respect it. And the way that I see happening now is they're talking about, you know, this is offensive to Muslims. It's not offensive to Muslims at all. And if you look at the countries they're attacking, like Syria, which is, you know, predominantly Muslim, but a big, you know, large Christian minority, you know, when you get a taxi in Damascus before the conflict, you know, Christians like to, you know, wear crosses and hang crosses and things like that from their, to show that they were Christians. We're very proud and open about it. And the country was very, very proud of its mosques and churches, you know. They were, I mean, you know, this was a country that was a kind of a model, really, of different civilizations and cultures living together and tolerating each other. So when you think about it, you know, they're really going to push that now, you know. Because, of course, the Saudis, the friends of the West, are the people who are flooding, you know, our cities with Wahhabi nutcases, you know, and they're being kind of taught all this hate discourse, you know. In a way, Iran, if you look at it, I mean, one of the kind of contradictions of all this is, you know, recently people talk about, maybe this is a hopeful aspect. I mean, Viktor Orban of Hungary, you know, Viktor Orban of Hungary is quite blunt as well when he talks about, you know, Muslims. We don't, you know, we're a Christian nation and we don't want Muslims and this kind of thing. But Hungary has very good relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And in fact, they had meetings recently in Tehran where the Iranians said that they thought that, I think it was rather the Hungarians, said that they wanted Hungary to become a portal for Iran and Europe, you know. So again, you know, this is these are the kind of relations that we could have with Islamic countries. But this is not the kind of, you know, because we're being run, because our governments are essentially crime syndicates run by gangsters like the man you just mentioned, Boris Johnson, and others who serve, you know, oil and military contracts and the oligarchs of the military industrial complex, and couldn't care less about the people they govern. We're in a situation where we are heading towards a complete fragmentation of society, you know. But I see it more rather than the kind of the Damocles sword, as it were, of the Third World War, the one, you know, the big nuclear conflagration. I see it more as a globalization of war, you know, like you will see more and more of Syria's emerging, and that could go on for a century, you know. I think this is something that's going to go on for a long time.
Garrod, it's brilliant analysis. Thanks for coming on. Folks, go to garrodocolmon.org. Claire has tweeted that out. We've tweeted it as well. We've retweeted it there. Excellent analysis. Thought-provoking, experienced analysis of what's going on in the region and what it means for the rest of the world. Garrod, have a marvellous Christmas. I know you've got a young one there. I remember the last time we were talking, there was a baby in the background. So yeah. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
Same,
right?
Same to you. Merry Christmas, Richie, and talk to you again soon.
Well, your work is great, mate. I really appreciate it. And it's eye-opening stuff. Thanks, Garrod. Bye for now.
Thanks. See you, Richie. Bye-bye.
Great stuff. Garrod O'Colman, live from Paris. And terrific stuff from him on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. You heard the man there. Trump, who expressed the more moderate, more thoughtful approach to Russia and to ISIS in Syria during the campaign. Garrod said there might be a detente between Russia and the United States. It might not be a real one, a fake one maybe, but there might be a cooling of hostilities there while these proxy wars are fought in other countries. But at the same time, Trump's allegiance with Israel might spell huge problems for Iran, and that's one to watch closely in the next 6 to 8 months, I suppose, if not the first 6 to 8 weeks of the new year. Fascinating stuff. Huge amount of tweets came in there. I've retweeted a few. I favourited a few more of those. Go to twitter.com, put Richie Allen Show without any gaps, Richie Allen Show into Twitter, press enter, and you will see what other people are tweeting there. Shall we take a break? Just a quick break. Back with plenty more in a minute.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
is a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, before we get David Noakes on to talk about the European Union, Brexit, what's going on here, and the attempts to thwart Brexit, let me read out some messages. Firstly, hi to my mate Joanne Boddington. How you doing, Joanne? Joanne is based I know where Joanne is based. It's in Chorlton, I think. I think she's in Chorlton. She sent a nice message there. If you missed Garrido Colmón and his analysis of what's going on in Syria, in Yemen and in Iran and Israel and Russia, do catch the podcast. It'll, of course, be online not long after we finish. Hi to Gail. How you doing, Gail? Hi to Mazroth. Hi to Kevin Randolph. Kevin, how are you? Richie, do you think Trump will try to dismantle the satanic cult that is infested worldwide? Great question, Kevin. I don't believe so, mate. No, I don't. I don't ever see any leader of any country, either Western, Eastern, Northern or Southern, taking on those who operate in satanic VIP pedophile cults. I don't, mate, no. But you know what? You never know. Gail tweeted, I think we need to do the Native Americans did, or do what they did, globally come together peacefully. Lugas says, that's about something else. La Antenna tweets, Obama was the perfect anti-Bush product to sell to the war on terror weary. Now, after 8 years of smooth talk, Trump, says La Antenna. Faisal tweets, Garrod is the most accurate and detailed picture of geopolitics I've seen for some time. Kudos on the Muslim Christian respect, says Faisal. Thanks, Garrod, says Justin. Again, folks, if I missed your tweet, don't think I'm censoring you. I'm not. So many came in there. Garrod is jumping on board. Change since last interview. Even added talking about cognitive dissonance, says Colm in Dublin. Not a fan of what Garrod had to say there. So many tweets came in. Hi to Lee Jenkins. To Peaceful Resistance, who said, excellent analysis from Garrod. To Jason, to Mark Richards. Mark tweets, Trump wants Iran. They will be next. That's what the New World Order wants. Mark Richards tweeting the programme. Busy old programme tonight. Lots of activity on Twitter, and I really appreciate that. And again, apologies if I didn't read your tweet. It isn't because I don't want to read it. It's because because so many of them have come in. Right, it's time to get our next guest on. Like I said, it's a busy old show. He is David Noakes. He's a fascinating man. While we get him on, let's have some Stevie Wonder. A song called For Once In My Life on your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting on alternatecurrentradio.com, davidicke.com, the TuneIn app, and Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. Lots of great chat coming up after this. I have someone who needs me.
My life.
Alrighty, Stevie Wonder, and for once in my life on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Check out our broadcast partners, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, Alternate Current Radio, the TuneIn app, and more besides. Verifiably Europe's most listened to independent radio show nightly, with 40,000 plus listeners live. It's the number one podcast on Podomatic, and a million listens a month on YouTube.com. That's true as well. Subscribe to us at YouTube.com for any interviews you might have missed. Our next guest is somebody I've been speaking to since my radio days in Spain. I have a lot of time for him. He's a pilot, a former UKIP general election candidate, and a former employee of JP Morgan Chase. He's got an impressive resume. These days, amongst other things, he promotes the health benefits of GCMAF through immunocentre.eu. That's immunocentre.eu. In fact, the last time he was on the programme, about 8 or 9 months ago, we talked about GCMAF there. Today, though, we want to talk about the establishment and why or how, not so much how, but why it is determined to derail Brexit. You don't want to miss it. Let's welcome back to the programme David Noakes, who's in Hamburg in Germany. David, welcome. How are you?
Hello, Richie. Yeah, good to be with you.
Good to be with you. Thanks for taking the time out to speak to us. Like I said, it's been a while since we were on. We might have a word about GCMAF and the work you're doing there a bit later on. But you had a terrific website, David. I say had a terrific website. I'm typing as I'm speaking there. It's still online there. It's eutruth.org.uk. That's eutruth.org.uk. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the one,
most
right?
Most of it goes through the Westminster News now. The westminsternews.co.uk.
Oh, that's a better one, is it? Right, so westminsternews.co.uk. The wonderful thing about that website is it's an absolute collection. I'm getting a big echo here. I'll tell you what we're going to do, David. I'm going to disconnect the call and call you back. Because when you do that, it sometimes gets rid of that echo. Let's disconnect that. But that website, anyway, is a one-stop shop for everything you need to know about the European Union, how the European Union came into being, why it came into being, and what happened since then. David, I hope we're better. We might be better now. Yes, indeed we are. Welcome back. Good to have you on. So what's going on then? We voted on June 23rd to leave the European Union. I think the public at large, David, was pretty... They were under no illusion that leaving the European Union not only meant leaving the European Union, but also meant leaving the single market. There was no ambiguity. All the political parties said, a leave means you're out of the market, you're out of the European Union, you'll have to renegotiate your own trade deals. Since then, former prime ministers, former party leaders like Nick Clegg have all come out to say, well, you know what, in a year's time, we might be in a position where people might think differently, therefore we might need another referendum. In the middle of this, we had this challenge to whether or not the government could invoke Article 50 by a venture capitalist and a hairdresser. They won the day a couple of months ago in the appeals court. Now it's at the Supreme Court. What's going on, mate? Is this a case of the establishment will do everything and anything to prevent the UK leaving?
It is astonishing that 52% of the British people voted to leave the EU when the entire government and the governor of the Bank of England lied to us that the economy would be trashed the day after we voted to leave. All those people from David Cameron to Mark Carney have now been exposed as liars. And even though all those lies were rammed down our throats, we still voted to leave. We must really hate the European Union.
Absolutely right. And speak to us, David, about the this notion of the single market. This was on the table from day one. We knew, we were under no illusion, leaving meant leaving the single market, right?
Well, the single market is 7% of the world. 93% of the world is outside of the European Union. So who gives a damn about 7%? And don't forget, we lose 70 billion a year trading with that 7%, because with the EU's 120,000 EU regulations, many of which have been enforced in Britain, we can no longer trade with the European Union at a profit. Before we went into the European Union, we were even Stevens. You know, we weren't making a profit, nor were they. Now, every year, the European Union, their 7% of the world, makes a £70 billion profit out of England. And the sooner we dump that rotten 7%, the better off we'll be.
Simple as that. I watched with interest today. I don't know how many of our listeners watched, because it was boring in the extreme. I suppose it's meant to be boring. The first day of the Supreme Court case, the government telling the Supreme Court that it has the power to trigger Brexit. MPs expected Brexit to go ahead if the referendum went that way. You mentioned earlier 52%, 48%. It was a clear mandate that we had to leave the European Union. Nobody is better placed than you, because I don't know of anybody who's written more extensively, David, about what the European Union really is and what it was designed to be than you. Explain to our listeners why it is that they will do anything, that they will bend in any direction they need to bend in order to keep the European, to keep UK in the European Union.
Well, this goes back to a little before 1000 BC, when Israel had the good King David and then the bad King Solomon. And King Solomon wanted to build a one-world global dictatorship. And Freemasonry, that's the top 1% of Freemasonry, its central core, has been trying to build that global dictatorship ever since. And the European Union was our part of the global dictatorship. You know, it was going to be the American continents, North and South, the Pacific Rim, and the European Union. And with those three things working together, they reckoned that they'd have the global dictatorship dominating and controlling the whole world, and we ordinary humans wouldn't get a look in edgeways. That was the plan, and that's why the EU existed.
We spoke at great length, you and I, in the past, not in the recent past, but 5-6 years ago, on radio in Spain, and we talked about the Nazi roots of the European Union, and we talked about how the globalists tried to use the Nazis at the time in order to kind of set in place a post-World War II Europe run by the Nazis, but where the corporations would have all the spoils. And as you described and you said so many times, people would live in slavery. And they want a modern-day version of that, David, don't they?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, this is the bit that absolutely stuns me. 48% of the British people are stupid enough to want the EU dictatorship with its unelected three-tier Politburo and its sham parliament in Brussels. And they want the euro, the world's most disastrous currency, which has already completely wrecked France. I live in France. I mean, it's an absolute disaster. There's no rush hour anymore. 70% of the pubs are permanently shut. Half of the shops are shut. But Greece is twice as bad as France. And Italy is absolutely appalling because of the euro. And the Italian people, as they showed yesterday in their vote no, are determined to get rid of the euro. And yet 48% of the British people want a dictatorship and an economic disaster. I just can't get over it. But yes, you're absolutely right. The European Union was founded by a speech by Joseph Goebbels, one of Hitler's commanders, in June 1940. In 1942, they had a conference at Berlin University where the Nazi Party wrote out all the European Union's documentation. So the common agricultural policy, the common fisheries policy, common monetary policy, all the policies were written by the Nazi Party in 1942 while Adolf Hitler was in charge. And Adolf Hitler wasn't a nice man. He killed 55 million people. And then towards the end of the war, The German industrialists realized that the Germans were going to lose, and they had a meeting at which they decided that they would still take over Europe, but they would do it through regulations and by bribing prime ministers to sign their countries away. And so they decided that the European Union, which had already had its first conference, headed up by von Ribbentrop, who was a friend of the British royal family as well as a German general, 13 European nations attended the first conference of the European Union, which back in those days, of course, was called the European Economic Community. And then the war ended, and you couldn't sell Nazism or the European Economic Community to anyone. No one wanted to know. No one wanted anything to do with National Socialism, Nazism. So in 1946, they made the only change they've ever made to the European Union. They changed it from a Nazi basis to a communist basis. And then in 1958, the Deutsche Verteidigungsdienst Intelligence Department recruited three people as British saboteurs: Roy Jenkins, Edward Heath, and who was the other bloke? I might remember his name a bit later. And these three people, of course, rose to the top of British politics and drove the communist European Union into Britain.
And we know, and it's important to mention, that I know some of our listeners don't like him very much, but I've been speaking a lot over the years to Michael Shrimpton, but not just Shrimpton, obviously David Icke and others who wrote about this extensively back in the 90s. You mentioned politicians being bribed there, David. Heath wasn't bribed. He was blackmailed into taking England or the UK into Europe on very unfavourable terms because he was a filthy child abuser. We know this to be true now, right?
Well, we know that Edward Heath was a homosexual. We know he went to Jersey to the Hope de la Garenne little boys' home to abuse little boys. But as well as that homosexual blackmail, he did also receive a Nobel Peace Prize. He hadn't created any peace, but it was their way of money laundering a $3 million thank you. It might have been $5 million actually, for signing the first EU treaty, where he abolished all of Britain's fishing rights and the nation of Britain
stroke of the pen, basically.
With the first EU treaty.
Yeah.
And, you know, a quarter of a million fishermen lost their jobs. 100,000 fishwives lost their jobs. And the entire English fishing fleet rusted away on the east coast of America. So with his £3 or 5 million bribe, he bought a magnificent house in Salisbury and the yacht Morning Cloud, with which he went on to win the Admiral's Cup.
And abuse boys. Now, I know you weren't doing this. I just want to make the point that we're not equating, and David isn't equating, homosexuality with paedophilia. He's not doing that at all. He's pointing out that Heath was thought to be a homosexual. That was, you know, one thing that was, that was a rumour doing the rounds about Heath forever and a day. We're not equating it at all with paedophilia. And I don't want anybody sending in tweets and emails. We're not. There's no link whatsoever. Paedophiles come from every sexual orientation group. We know that. So what we have today then is, and I think when you were on the programme with us last year, we talked about trade agreements. We talked specifically about political unions. The desire always was, David, to concentrate global power into the hands of fewer and fewer and fewer people. And of course you can't do that if we all have sovereign nations governed by elected officials who see their job as doing the best for David Noakes and Richie Allen and Mrs. Murphy and Mr. Smith. We can't have that. So we've got to have political unions. We've got to have... And are you staggered? And I mentioned your website earlier on, and we'll tweet out the newer version of it now so people can get on there. Are you staggered by how little people seem to know, David, about the extent to with, or the extent with which the UK was ruled by Brussels. Because I was, you know, when I've gone out and about at weekends around the country on day trips just away from the job, and I meet people, not all the time, but occasionally people who listen to the programme, they say, Richard, I never knew that we really didn't have any self-governance left at all in this country. I didn't realise that everything that was passed as law here came from Brussels. Does that still surprise you, David, the extent with which people just know sod all about it?
Yes, it blows my mind. I mean, every year we get 3,500 regulations from Brussels. There are now 120,000 Brussels regulations in England, and most of them have no idea that they're there. So all our petrol stations in our towns were closed down by EU regulation. Our post offices are being closed by EU regulation. It is illegal for you to repair your own car under EU regulation. And you mentioned...
I didn't know that. Hang on a second. Is that true? You're not...
There's 120,000 EU regulations.
No way. So
their plan is to make you powerless.
Powerless.
And one of them says you cannot repair your own car. Now, you mentioned governments. I mean, the point is there are 205 governments, and they can't control 205 governments.
No.
They can't control three. Now, they absolutely hate President Putin of Russia because he does the very best he can for the Russian people. He's not aligned with the banksters. He's not aligned with the global elites. He does his own thing, and he does the very best he can for the Russian people. And for that, he's hated by the West, and the West are always lying about him. Actually, he's one of the best presidents in the world.
You won't be surprised, right, that we've had dozens of tweets. I'm just going to pause briefly to read these tweets. I told you time would fly by, Mr. Noakes, by the way. I know you're a reluctant radio interviewee, but time flies by when you're talking about these subjects. We might leave GCMAF today and get into it on another programme, maybe after Christmas, because I'm very fascinated by the work you're doing there. And I'm also very fascinated by the attacks that you and your team are subjected to regularly.
By the way,
people.
The website is gcmaf.se. You quoted the
I did, didn't
the
I?
Clinic website.
I'm always
the real
wrong,
website
Dave.
Is gcmaf.se.
gcmaf.se, that's Sierra Echo, gcmaf.se. Good stuff. I'll ask Claire to reach out. Listen, I'm always behind the times on this stuff. I'm the worst researcher in the world. I want to get you on the program in the new year to talk about that again, because it's absolutely fascinating. I'm going to read a few tweets out on this. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. A lot of people depressed about it because they see the inevitability, like we saw with Ireland and the Nice Treaty. Oh, you said that you didn't want to sign it. We'll come back next year and we'll keep asking you until such time as you give us the right answer. So, Luga tweets, as far as I'm concerned, I have grown up and only seen destruction by politicians and these institutions. Very little good comes out of them, says Luga. Stevie G tweets about the pentagrams. I'll retweet that, Stevie. People can make of that what they want there as well. Justin tweets, didn't Heath also make Britain a major global arms dealer? He did indeed. JP tweets, and JP is in Greater Manchester, the German Secret Service blackmailed Ted Heath to join the EU. He was a paedophile. The UK could repeal the 1963 signing, as mentioned by David earlier on. Hi to Fluffles as well. So many tweets coming in on this, folks. The best thing to do is go to Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, in Twitter, press enter, and then you can see what people are directly tweeting to me as well. Okay, so do that. Westminsternews.co.uk is the website to find out everything you ever needed to know about the formation of the EU and why. David Noakes is on the line to us now from Hamburg in Germany, ironically, talking about Germany there. What can people do about it, David? I mean, if people are so ignorant, and they are, I mean, you talked there, I mean, I didn't know, for example, that, and I take your word for it, because you don't lie, your information on Westminster News is solid, it's brilliantly briefed. I mean, the idea that you can't, you know, get a little trolley, get a couple of spanners and a couple of monkey wrenches and lie under your own car and make a reparation to it, that you might be in breach of some law. Now, we're not saying that that's going to be enforced. I mean, I don't imagine any policeman or policewoman is going to come along and say, what are you doing there under your car? But it doesn't matter. It's the fact that the law exists in the first place. We reported, I think you reported on a show with me in London some years ago, that animal protection laws coming from Brussels, am I right in saying, David, that those laws are the reason why we have flooding in the Somerset Downs areas? Because they can't dredge these rivers, right? Because of the EU.
You're absolutely right.
Madness.
One of the EU regulations is we are not allowed to dredge our own ditches. We're not allowed to dredge our own canals on the Somerset levels. Another point I'd like to make is, you know, we've got these judges, three judges, who say we have to put it to Parliament. No, we have a constitution. All the judges have deliberately forgotten this constitution, the British constitution, because they are all corrupt. 96% of judges are Freemasons trying to build the one world dictatorship. But under our constitution, written every word since Magna Carta, the Petition of Right, the Act of Supremacy, all the case law, it's all written. It's very, very clear. You may not undermine the sovereignty of the nation of Britain. And these three judges have tried to completely destroy the sovereignty of Britain. And this is considered the most serious criminal act in British law, the punishment for which is still to hang by the neck till dead. So these lawyers, these judges, should already be dead. And don't forget, the Queen has signed six EU treaties to abolish this nation, the worst act of high treason this nation has ever seen. And the punishment for that is to hang by the neck until dead. Now, the Queen is the only monarch to have broken every single one of her coronation oaths, even the oath to stay independent, to keep the Church of England independent of Rome. She's been to Rome five times dressed in black as a sign of submission to Rome. So she's even broken the religious parts of her oaths, of her coronation oaths. But the worst one is, of course, she is responsible to maintain the constitution of Britain, the British constitution. And by signing those six treaties, she abolished it. She should have hung by the neck until dead 10 times by now. Why is she still walking?
Yeah, I mean, that would be controversial with some of our listeners, maybe not many of our listeners, you know, who mightn't agree with capital punishment, but they'll understand exactly where you're coming from. But this royal family is no different than the royal families of Denmark and the royal families of Spain and the Netherlands, David, in terms of that they interbreed, and this is not a joke, they interbreed not only with one another, but also with the central banking families, right? This is where it all goes,
that's
right?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, the point is, our British royal family is an entirely German family. They only learned to speak English halfway through the last century. And, you know, they were the Battenbergs, you know, they were the, it'll come back to me in a minute, the Saxe-Coburg-Gothas of Hanover in Germany. And they have done everything they can for the German European Union right from the very beginning. They are German, they are still German, and they support the German European Union.
And of course, we have a global media, and that's concentrated in the hands of a tiny, tiny, tiny minority of people. And their job is to act as gatekeepers to this information, isn't it, David? They can't possibly allow the public at large learn who the royal family really are, who they are in league with in terms of bringing about this, you know, one world government that they want, their relationships with the Rockefeller, Warburg, Oppenheimer, Rothschild crime dynasties. That's what the media is there to do. And, you know, the media is playing the game at the moment. I go back to the single market again, and you quite rightly said it's 7%. You know, you've got 93% of the rest of the world to do deals with, not to mention the fact that England's percentage, or the UK's percentage of its overall trading, hasn't increased with the EU member states over the last 25, 30 years anyway. So it's a nonsense. But they don't want to tell you this. They don't want people to understand it. They don't want people to understand that countries not in the European Union do better at making deals with countries within the European Union than the UK does. There's been absolutely no economic benefit whatsoever to the UK being part of the bloc. But this free movement of people, David, I've had an email from Claire. Says she's in the Republic of Ireland, but doesn't say where. And she says, does David have any opinion on the migrant crisis and that being all part of this one world global governance agenda as well, in terms of the divide and conquer aspects of that? And of course, David, that's a really good question she's asking. That segues nicely into Merkel opening the door to over 1 million migrants in Germany last year. What do you say to that? I mean, Claire is right, isn't she? It's all part of that agenda.
Well, she's right. But I mean, Germany's only had 1 million. We've had 30 million over the last 40 years. And according to the Office of National Statistics, in another 8 years' time, we English will be a minority in our own nation. London is 40% English. That's why it's called Londonistan, because it's not an English city anymore. And 22 of our biggest cities, Bradford, Birmingham, Bingley, Luton, Leicester, London, are majority foreigners. Now, they're not EU immigrants. This is our own civil service sabotaging us.
Yeah.
This is the Social Security, who's offering them free cars, free houses, free income to move here, and it's the border force allowing them to come in. The European Union says we've got to have so many immigrants, but it is the British civil service which is sabotaging our own nation by bringing in 30 million, and soon we will have nowhere to live because our nation will be ruled by foreigners.
This is a really important point, and I want to mention something that Gerard O'Colman, the geopolitical analyst who works with RT and Press TV and others, he was on in the first hour. And also, a point he made tonight was made by Gilad Atzmon, the jazz saxophonist and political commentator on the programme. I agree with everything you said there, but there is a but coming. We have to resist the trap of identity politics, don't we? You know, this identifying as white and Christian and falling into that trap. Because ultimately, those people coming to this country, whether it's from Eastern Europe, whether it's from North Africa, they are not the enemy. The enemy are the oligarchs and the central bankers who want to divide and conquer us, to completely eliminate sovereignty. And they do that by facilitating this exact situation. We really need to unite against those people. It's easier said than done when public services, David, are being run into the ground and there's a great disparity between how people are treated. You know, British people, UK people, ethnic UK people think, well, I'm not treated as fairly as somebody who's come in from another country. So I understand all of that, and it's important. But we have to resist the trap of falling for the Nigel Farages and the Donald Trumps. Do you agree with that?
Well, this doesn't happen in any other country. I mean, other countries around the world don't let 30 million immigrants in because they say, well, we are Indian or we are Norwegian or whatever we are, and they don't let them come in. It's only Britain that tempts people with large money offers, cars, houses, income, tempts foreigners to come in. We are the only nation in the world that does it. And by the way, I'd just like to make the point, the two richest nations in Europe are not in Europe. Norway, with 5 million population, very small, and Switzerland, with only 8 million population, are the two richest countries in Europe, and they are not in the European Union.
And that's a really good point and a really well-made point. But I just only briefly want to stick on that last point. Ultimately, David, these people succeed when we hate one another. Now, I'm not saying that. I'm not an idiot. You know, I'm not one of these bourgeois metropolitan lefties. I'm not saying, oh, yeah, let everybody in then, and together we'll defeat the system. I'm not an idiot. It doesn't work like that. Of course they want to dilute a sense of national identity. And that's one of their, it's one of the tools they use, and it's wrong. And I have no problem with people being proud to be British or proud to be Irish. I think it's a good thing. But I'm saying, and again, I'm not looking for the applause line here to get clapped on the back. I mean it from the bottom of my heart. We have to resist hating people. You know, listen, well, at the same time, we have to fight, you know. Go ahead.
The point is, they could have driven scores of millions of immigrants into any nation in the world and created massive street fighting and terrorism. Unfortunately, the bloody fools drove them into England, and we in England are the kindest, most tolerant nation on earth. So they have completely failed to start up any kind of fighting with the 30 million people they've sent in here.
You're quite right. There hasn't been, when we've had race riots in Bradford and elsewhere, you're quite right, not on the level that maybe people would have expected it. There's no doubt that the English are an incredibly charitable group of people, if you can quantify an entire country like that. But I think you can. I think the Irish are the same. I think Western European nations, you know, they like to open their wallets and to give to causes. But I think largely, I mean, I've travelled in North Africa, I've travelled around Europe. I find people generally are pretty good like that. But, you know, I just worry, David, that, I mean, not you, you know, I've spoken to you many years. I read what you say extensively. It's very scientific. It's very matter of fact. But I don't want people following groups like the English Defence League, the BNP, because they're just missing the point. Yes, this dilution of culture, this multiculturalism agenda, was dreamt up by the Frankfurt Rothschilds, was dreamt up for the purpose of dividing us so that we would never go after them and what they're trying to do. But at the same time, we just have to be careful. People are people, human beings are human beings, and we all have the same enemy. But you know, if you're living in an area, and for a time we lived in North Wembley when we were making television programmes there, and I did say once or twice as I was commuting from North Wembley to Wembley itself, which is only a single stop on the tube, sometimes we'd walk it, there were days when you couldn't see anybody who looked like you. Now, I'm an Irish guy who's travelled all over the world. That doesn't bother me. But at the same time, I completely understand and understood why it unsettled and changed the lives of people, you know, British people, UK-born and bred people, multi-generational, who lived in that area. I could see why it disturbed them. And it's too easy to say, oh, people are racist, which is what, of course, the elite want, when it's not the case with most people. With most people, they're frightened and they just don't understand what's happened to their community, you know. It's complex, this, David, isn't it? It's very complex.
Well, that is why Brexit happened. What tipped the balance? It was Labour voters who are fed up with driving in towns like Leicester, where the infrastructure's hopelessly wiped out by immigration it can't possibly control. So it takes them hours to get to school. When they get to school, they dump their kid off in a place that speaks 41 languages and English is a tiny minority. And then they go on to work where their salaries are being halved by immigration. And those are the people who just got absolutely sick of the whole immigration thing and tipped the balance on Brexit.
Got to ask you a question about Paul Nuttall. I don't know if you ever met Paul during your time at UKIP some years ago. You might not have. He was challenged by Andrew Marr on the Andrew Marr show yesterday. And I thought, again, it just showed up this political class for what it is. You know, we keep falling for, you know, populism. Like UKIP before the referendum. I mean, I spoke to Roger Helmer, had Neil Hamilton on and a few other people on. And I got into them about TTIP and about trade agreements and about free market capitalism. And you know, I gave them a fair go and a fair challenge and asked them some tough questions. Nuttall was on the hustings 4 or 5 years ago and said then, and he hasn't really retracted it, that, you know, all things should be considered for the National Health Service, including private funding of it. I mean, David, what do people need to hear before they understand that this political class is one and the same and are serving the same masters?
Will they ever understand? I mean, you know, you've got government lying continually. So how are they ever going to learn the truth? I don't think there's an easy way to do it. I mean, the woman who won the leadership for the of UKIP was called Diane. What was her name? Do you remember what her name was?
I do. Yeah, she only lasted a few days.
Well, UKIP is a party that is split with common purpose.
Diane James is her name.
Diane James. Yeah. She was a brilliant person, absolutely brilliant, the best they had. But UKIP was riven with Freemasonry and common purpose, who were planted in there to destroy the party. And she had to put up with that for 1 week, and she just couldn't take it, which is a great shame. I mean, she should have known it was going to be a very difficult job. Paul Nuttall is nothing like as good as Diane James.
Well, I tell you what's going to be interesting. What's going to be interesting, if this Supreme Court case throws up the scenario that they basically uphold the previous decision, and they say that the government can't invoke Article 50 without getting parliamentary approval.
Hang on. Article 50 is a complete red heading.
Oh, it is, of course. You and I both know that, but the public at large don't know that.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, there's six completely illegal EU treaties, starting with Edward Heath's, and all the government has to do, all Theresa May has to do, is to announce that all six EU treaties are illegal under the British Constitution, and we're then out of Europe. We don't want to invoke Article 50. It's irrelevant. Neither do we need to do trade deals. 90% of the trade around the world is done without trade deals. When we went into the European Union, we were no longer allowed to trade freely with New Zealand. So they had to drive 3 million sheep off their cliffs. That's the amount of damage the European Union is doing to our trade around the world. We just need to repeal the six treaties, get out, forget all about the EU, and trade with nations where we can trade profitably. It is so easy.
It's as simple as this. And the last thing we'll say on this, and I've enjoyed having you back on, David. I look forward to speaking to you next year about GC Math. You know, the lies are overwhelming. We know that the UK buys more from the EU than it sells to it. Now, is that fact on its own, and it's an irrefutable fact, should be enough for the BBC and Channel 4, if they weren't owned by the establishment, to point out the UK has nothing to fear in terms of tariffs. Why? I've said on this programme before, and it got a few laughs. It wasn't meant to get a few laughs. Can you imagine, David, what Citroën and Peugeot and Fiat and all the other car manufacturers of Europe, Mercedes, can you imagine what they would do to their own governments if those governments said, we're going to impose heavy fines on British goods coming into the country? Those car manufacturers alone, let alone food and wine manufacturers, would murder their governments, right? They would murder them. They would say, well, you can't do that because the UK would just reply in kind. Madness.
Well, we really don't care whether they do or they don't, because they're only 7% of the world.
Absolutely.
The EU is irrelevant. It's 7%.
We'll get our cars from somewhere else. Remind our listeners of the Westminster website again about where they can find out more. Not find out more, but read extensively, because a fantastic avalanche of information, a tranche of information on there about the history of the European Union. Remind us of that website, David.
Yeah, well, eutruth.org.uk for the older stuff, and the westminsternews.co.uk for the new stuff.
Tell you what, mate, it was a pleasure. Thanks for coming back on. I'm glad the line held up well there. Sometimes when people are overseas, you never know what you're going to get with Skype. Do come on the show in January at a convenient time, and let's talk about GC Math.
Okay, Richie. Good to hear from you.
You too, my friend. Bye for now. David Noakes on the line to us there from Hamburg in Germany, where he flew today. He's a pilot as well. Good stuff, that. Just to point out, I did retweet a couple of dissenting tweets there. David Stewart Cole not having anything of what David Noakes was saying. That's okay as well. We're a democracy, aren't we? Everybody's entitled to their opinion. I do appreciate that, David. Thanks for sharing it with us. It's exactly 11 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to take a wee break. When we come back, I'll read a few tweets because there's been quite a few, and tell you about the meditation from Kim, and then we'll kind of wrap up.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret Ice Nine plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Lovely stuff, right? It's exactly, what time is it now? Messing around. Systems have changed here. I've added some stuff and taken away some stuff. You know, this studio that I broadcast on, which I've not mentioned much in the last few weeks since it went online. We've got this wonderful old bells and whistles radio studio. Not more than 15, 20 feet away from where I sleep. And it's an amazing thing. It came about because of your generosity and the generosity of, well, one person in particular, it must be said. And we have this wonderful studio. And I know I've been asked several times, can I send pictures of it out? Because it is absolutely terrific. But the room it's contained in needs to be decorated. I want to put certain things in there, backdrops and stuff like that, so that eventually we can have a very, very, very good HD webcam, so that, I don't know why you'd even want to do it, but if you wanted to watch the show as the show is going on, there's nothing more boring than that, than watching a guy or a girl sitting behind a microphone in a radio studio. But if you wanted to do that, you can do it. So I won't put pictures of it out until the time comes that it's decorated properly. And the only thing holding that back is time, my time, because I don't have any time. You know, we put a lot of hours in on a daily basis here. I don't have time to go and get what I need to get to do it. But anyway, the studio is magnificent, and I'm proud of it. I know pride is supposed to be, you know, not a great human characteristic, but I'm very proud of the studio. Now, that's it for the programme, nearly. Just to remind you, coming up at the end of the programme, a healing meditation from Kim Hutchison, entitled Going to the Heart of the Cosmos to Heal Your Own Heart. That's it's not brand new, we're honest here. That first aired way back in July, but it's lovely. We'll have a brand new healing meditation from Kim next week. The engineer wasn't on hand to record Kim, I think, today. I think that's the reason. But this is a terrific meditation, and it's worth sticking around for. So we'll do that in a minute now. So all that's left for me to tell you is full week of shows this week. Voice not so bad today, still a bit scratchy. I couldn't speak yesterday morning. I got up really early Sunday morning. I was up at 6, and in fact I was tweeting at 6 a.m. and some of you wags were saying the reason I didn't do Sunday View was because I had a hard night on Saturday. I didn't, or anything like it. And I was up at 6 a.m. for Jesus sake. In fact, I'd prepared a very good Sunday View, he says modestly. What I should say is I prepared a thought-provoking and interesting Sunday View, but I couldn't speak above a whisper and I was worried about it. I don't want to miss any programmes in the run-up to Christmas. Just to remind you, I will broadcast up and to the 22nd, I think. Let me look at the camera now. Yeah, the 22nd, which is Thursday. Then I'll be off until the 2nd of January, which is a Monday. That's not a lot of time, really, because when you take the weekend days out of it, it's only a few days. So our last programme will be on December the 22nd. I'll return on Monday, January 2nd. You might want to put that in your diary. You mightn't care less. But I'm telling you anyway, because that's what I do. So thanks so much for your tweets today. Thanks to our tiny team of Claire, of Simon, and of Aaron as well. I'll be back with you tomorrow, without fail, barring a disaster, at 8 p.m. GMT tomorrow with more, hopefully more terrific guests and more chat as well. Thanks so much for listening to the programme. I'm going to leave you and love you today with something from Amy Winehouse, because I was asked by a listener to the programme called Mary Dalton, who listens to the show in County Tyrone, which is in Ireland. I've never been to Tyrone, shamefully. Never visited Tyrone. Gaelic football county, big Gaelic football county. So to Mary Dalton, thanks Mary for listening to the programme. Look after yourselves and one another. Kim is next. This is Amy Winehouse. Bye for now.
Sometimes I go out by myself and I look across the water. And I think of all the things, what you're doing. And in my head, I paint a picture. Well, since I come home, well, my body's been a mess. And I miss your tender hip and the way you like the daggers. Won't you come on over? Stop making a fool. Nothing.